golly, Shorty knows. This morning's a little warmer than yesterday. And, that's a pleasant spot. Well, today's the day. Nice job interview. This is the only in-person job interview I've done. All the rest have been very long distance. Plan B stuff. I don't even know where this one is set. I don't know if this was one of the desperate measure ones, the one at Cannon Air Force Base. So maybe plan B 0.02 or something. Anyway. It feels colder, but I think it's because I'm wearing the white shirt I'm going to wear at the interview. I've only got one thing to do in Clovis that kind of helps justify the trip, honestly. I got a certified, well, I got, this always happens over a holiday weekend where the post office is closed on Monday. It's now Tuesday. So this morning I got to pick up a certified letter to me addressed to the Ag Science Center, and I'm scared to death that it's some kind of, and you're being laid off, which would make getting this next job really advantageous, I think. Anyway, so you know, I don't know what the letter has. I'm hoping, you know, if I'm lucky, it was just mislabeled. They said it was a letter. Chances are it's a, you know, it might be the iPad coming back. It may just be a notification that the iPad was received. Whatever. I don't know. Although I think that would have come as an email. But, you know, it's really hard to know what's going on. Certified letters make me skittish. I've rarely gotten them. I can't remember last time I did, actually. Anyway, has to do with, I don't know. So, I was pretty nervous yesterday. I think I'm okay now. But, I still have to go get it and find out what it is. It may not be that much of a big deal. In fact, if anything else, it may just be a thing that says, you know, I'm a pretty, I'm a pretty dense person, you know. Communication from the spirit to me is often tricky and maybe a little garbled, and sometimes I need obvious manipulations in my life to make me do stuff I need to do. And so this may very well be that. So, anyway, I'm just grateful. Grateful to be here. people to be putting stuff together. Anyway, outside of all that, I review yet again for people. My current sources of information where I get things from and how that affects things. I guess it's really kind of wrapped up in my morning, in the morning mix, as they say. Lisa always talks about whenever, it seems like she talks about on a pretty regular basis, that we have our little private radio station in the house, so you can wake up to whatever you like, as opposed to whatever local programming you can tend to get. And, so let's go to it. Almost every day, I can't think of a day that doesn't do it. We wake up to live Ireland, traditional Celtic music. Not all traditional, but a lot of it is. You know, I think you should always wake to music first, things that don't tax the mind too much, because your brain's just trying to get going. I'm usually awake a little before it starts, if not a few hours, when I'm working on writing. I'm not doing it at the moment. So a little bit of live Ireland, maybe not more than, I think it's pretty good to kick on at 4, and it gets replaced by a podcast that's downloaded every morning, reasonably early. BBC Global News is kind of a wrap-up of things from BBC programming from the day before. And it's pushed out pretty early in the morning out of London, which is, of course, far earlier than we are. So that's what snaps on at 4:30. I prefer getting my news and commentary from the BBC. As I've said many, many times before this recording, news coverage in the United States is myopic. And it's just a cultural thing, you know. It's not like, oh, they're a bad news organization. No, they're giving people what people want to hear. Americans don't tend to care about the rest of the world. At least, not any level besides giving up the cost of a cup of coffee so they don't have to look at, you know, little well-bellied African kitties or something. But they have to understand that quite African, Middle East, European centric, kind of sensible, given their old colonial stretch. Coverage of China is a little weak, although they do discover China. I call themselves the world's radio station. That's probably about as close as you're going to get. I used to listen a little bit to Joyce Shigella Vubai, German. Alma, if you understand, all these things have those producing, you know. Let's be honest, you know. You're going to tend to get a British attitude about the world from the BBC. It works for me a little better. U.S. coverage is all about USA, 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 we're number one. And you know, it comes out everything. I like the BBC because, you know, Britain has become a little grandfatherly, it's a little stodgy, you know, a little more retrospect about things like empire and about projecting your attitude out in the world. So you get a little bit more of that, which I find a little refreshing. So that's really the first thing, first information that pops up. Next up is Alex Jones, which is really becoming kind of a media conglomerate on his own, although one that nobody's ever heard of, which is fine, you know. He's making, he's made a good bit of money out of his stuff. He's probably one of the most suspicious people and quite willing to you know, tear apart the party line, you know. Just today he was talking about voter fraud. The reports out of Ohio that you're never going to hear about because the election is now over and who cares. But reports that he sees and he's gotten that there was significant election fraud there. And that, you know, Obama won more than 99% in many districts. And everybody's saying, how the heck do you do that? Everybody's saying, oh, the election is so polarized. You know, how can any given thing have almost 100% return for one candidate and none for the other? Not really. It does, you know, so. He's a guy that smells smells evil and a conspirator behind every tree. And Lisa listens to him for entertainment. I listen to him because, I'm sorry, when push comes to shove and something bad stuff really starts hitting the fan, I don't know at what point you start saying that that's happening. I think it's been happening for ages. But at some point, it's supposed to get a lot worse. Alex Jones would have been the one to predict it. Would have seen it coming first. He is America's prime kook. And on almost everything that's gone bad, he would have given you enough information from a variety of sources. Alex is really interesting. Most people think he's a freak job, and you go, well, it says you have to understand, he pulls the information he gets predominantly from what would be considered the mainstream press, just not the front pages. America's a very front page, you know, and I'm not saying that anybody else is much less than this, but Americans are always, you know, what matters, what doesn't, and sadly, I think, when push comes to shove, you know, you could have read the tea leaves if you would have been looking at tea leaves like Alex Jones. And, you know, do I think that 9/11 attacks were staged? Yes, I do. I don't know how, you know. Everybody says, oh, no, they, you know, those planes were missiles. They killed all the people on the ground somewhere. There's all kinds of stories about how it could have been done. But I'm sorry, the facts and simple physics point to the fact that towers were brought down by, you know, decently well-controlled demolition. When you see how they came down, how they came straight down, and you go, if a plane runs into you, you know, number one, it'll either knock the building over or at least cause structural damage that will tend to have it go over and fall on top of other buildings, you know. It'll do kind of a, what do you call it? It's not a fulcrum, I guess. I don't know. It'll get knocked over. That would be the kind of damage happening. The kind of damage that within the matter of one day brought down the thing straight down. You know, I'm sorry, World Trade Center 7 is a prime example. There was even a warning ahead of time that it was going to come down, and there was no evidence that it had any reason to come down. I thought I listened to one story about extra insurance policies taken out by the guy that actually owns the World Trade Centers. At that time, the land belongs to the Port Authority. The building ended up belonging to a guy, an investor. The special insurance policies he took out not too long before the things came down. And the fact that the World Trade Centers were practically empty buildings, you know, they weren't very, you know, it wasn't very occupied. A lot of empty space. We've been pulling away from those kinds of buildings for a long time, so a lot of them are just there looking pretty on a skyline and you know, difficult to get tenants for it. So, anyway, it's all very, very interesting. And, you know, do I know how it happened? No. Do I know, you know, do I think the 20 guys from the Middle East were involved? Sure. You know, do I think that it was more orchestrated than we were led to believe? Oh, I think definitely so. And so, honestly, you know, and everybody go, yes, when you listen to that Alex Jones guy, he'll make you crazy. And you go, well, no, I had evidence presented to me. You know, books, videos, stuff like that. And even if, you know, oh, that stuff's all doctored. Oh, that stuff's all circumstantial. That's just the kind of stuff that you can do this and do that. And you go, well, you know what? I said, it was a convenient happening for for several people who profited off of just not, you know, making up a good story. Who made up the story? Well, that was obvious. It was the government. The government made up the ultimate story. The 9/11 Commission report is kind of a sad document written mostly by people who either profited or were paid off. You know, either by their presence on the commission. You know, for several years, you'll get paid a crapper load of money to be on this commission. You're going to get paid by the government, and this is what the government would like the conclusion to be. You know, write a report that ultimately comes to that conclusion. You know, and they ultimately did. You know, well, it wasn't a perfect thing. It wasn't a slam dunk, for instance, but it didn't have to be. All it had to do was to basically give all of the basic players a pass, you know, and that was great, you know. Everybody got paid off, everybody got what they wanted, or were able to take good political advantage of it. The Bush administration was looking so milquetoasty and ineffectual. And boy, let me tell you, did that event and the days after it really make George Bush look like mega warrior. You're told, you know. Anyway, so, it doesn't, you know. And all it does, you know, it doesn't make me want to go out and march in the streets. It doesn't make me want to do anything. It just does one thing to me. It says, don't trust what you hear. Don't trust what you hear. So anyway, Hawks Jones is number three in the mix. That's all we really have in the mornings. On Saturday and Sunday, we have, I have the general conference shuffle. A mix of talks and music from last general conference, all randomized. So any given morning you wake up, you're going to hear different talks. Not in order. I used to do it session by session, but because we only listen for sporadic periods on Sunday mornings mostly, that means you're always going to hear the same, you know, five or six talks. And so I changed it so that each individual talk and each individual piece of music was separate. And you just tell the thing to play randomly. Random non-repeating. It keeps track of what it's played so it doesn't play it twice. And so you get a different flavor of conference every single week. Which works good because you got like 23 weeks to go through before the next conference. Or so. 26 weeks. Yeah, 26, thank you. Anyway. And that's Saturday and Sunday morning. We're rarely up early enough that the Saturday morning conference stuff is really consequential. It cuts over to the BBC later, but usually we're already up by then. The radio doesn't wake us up on Saturday. And there goes Vic Alex Jones, and that's about it. What else? Anyway, those are the things of the morning mix. Now there's some other stuff that I either do or have listened to that was really, really excellent. I don't listen to it much anymore. It takes a lot of time, and I probably should listen to it again, because these two podcasts that I have followed, between the two of them, did a really excellent job. And the first one is called Econ Talk, by a professor named Russ Roberts from George Mason University. And it's really an excellent it's an excellent example of what a modern educator and the university that surrounds it can do to keep itself relevant in a new world. Many podcasts are up and down because they simply, you know, people keep looking at these as the possibility of a new funding stream or to replace a job or something. And I think podcasting is kind of passe these days, because that hope never panned out. You know, people always hoped that it would be kind of a replacement for radio. And to a large extent, it never really was able to meet that expectation. And sadly, because it didn't live up to the original hype, podcasting is pretty much dead now. You know, when you go, well, how many podcasts are you get a lot less than they used to be? You know, other models of information exchange kind of took over. And that said, I ran podcasts, but nobody listened to me. Well, I shouldn't say that. A few people listened to me. And, you know, I don't think I was expecting very much out of it. It was just me filling in dead time that wouldn't have been filled in otherwise. Sad part is that the great downsizing, the crash, you can even think of it as a perfect storm, hit, and I lost all my recordings, you know, and to be really honest, I don't know how much of a sad thing that really ended up being. So anyway, this is actually one of the more popular podcasts ever, even in the heyday of podcasts. Is Econ Talk, which is really funny because it's actually talk about economics. And so when people would say, how come this thing wins, and how come it's such a boring, stupid, kind of esoteric topic? And you go, because it's probably, you know, it's probably one of the most excellent forms of pure education, where you're actually going to get really some of the best minds, or actually listen to the best minds on it. And of course, there are people you've never heard of, that will never grace the stage very long. You know, people who are trying to really make good, solid, you know, trying to make you an authentically smarter person, that's really not, you know, number one, it doesn't play very well. I think of the show Freedom Watch by Judge Neapolitano. He had a show, I think on Fox Business, and I don't know how long he had it for, but it wasn't for a terribly long time, and it shut down due to low ratings. He had a really strong following with those that did listen to him, did watch him. It was actually quite stunning because Judge Neapolitano is very libertarian, and you have to understand, we are a very, very small minority held in contempt by the powers that be as being a threat to their agenda, you know, which has a lot to do with staying in power. Nobody likes the libertarians because the libertarians don't want anybody in power particularly, at least on a governmental level. And, you know, that's really quite, you know, it's like, you know, there's one thing upon which Republicans and Democrats can always agree on, find great common ground, is that they hate libertarians. You know, I think Republicans hate them more because they tend to stifle, to suck more from the Republican base. Republicans tend to be more thinkers, if you're thinking along a Myers-Briggs sort of personality trait stuff. Republicans are more thinkers. Now, they're not particularly good thinkers, but they're more thinkers. They tend to try to engage the mind more, and Democrats tend to engage the heart more. They're more feelers. And so it's always interesting when you're going with a kind of a libertarian-ish sort of person that you're going to get they really tend to be even heavily more on the thinking side, and that really tends to make them a very small group, you know, because very few people actually think or want to think or want to apply thought. And and that's really quite sad, you know. But people are people, you know. I think it is not a statement that whatever government you have tends to reflect the people. And if you're unhappy with the way America's going, you have to understand that it really ends up being something of a reflection, not completely, of course, but something of a reflection of the people. And, you know, I think the last election just tells us the continuing trend of people who don't really want to think. They want to have, you know, they don't want to have to worry about that. They'd rather hear about their favorite singing star or movie star to the exclusion of all else. And, you know, and these are our heroes and our idols, and we want to be just like them. And, you know, these are people that don't think. And if they want to be treated with any kind of respect at all, it's usually by feeling, you know. Oh, I feel that. Oh, I go do this. I go and I give money to saving puppies because the puppies are cute and I never want to see another dead puppy. And you go, well, okay. And that's kind of where things kind of go. It's sad. You know, you're not going to see a lot of thought applied. People who do apply some thought find themselves marginalized really quickly by those who are just better at reading, what do you call it? reading the pulse of popular culture and being able to tap into that. And so, you know, that's why all big stars are environmentalists, because that's what speaks the popular mind. Oh, you can never say anything bad about the environment. And you go, well, actually thinking people are very suspicious of what gets painted this way. You know, what gets painted with the environmental brush. Because we don't think much of it. So, nose is getting cold. Anyway, so that's kind of where all that is kind of going. And so, yeah, this is I am not surprised that thinking voices will have, although a very strong and supportive audience, the audience will be quite small. Comparatively, you know, compared to other things. And so when you have kind of a media system that doesn't want to deal with catering to the needs of, you know, 10,000 here, 50,000 there, perhaps even 100,000. And you go, that's inconsequential to them. They deal with millions, millions and millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions is what they prefer. So you've seen a real split, you know. The internet's such an interesting thing. It caters toward really kind of all comers, and you really have to. Well, you know, it's still going for the most eyeballs it can get. You know, media is always going to be that way. It's always going to be most eyeballs, and. If society changes, if the culture changes, you know, hey, TV is going to be right there spending all of its time and effort trying to figure out where that wants to go, you know. Reality television happened, you know, and all of a sudden everybody had reality television. Yeah. You know, almost everything else died for having good coverage of watching some scantily clad folk, grumpy ones, sexy ones, gross ones. You know, it was almost like there was kind of a formula for what kind of people to put on some island or to put in some house that you wanted them into for success. Even PBS, the vaunted one that doesn't cater to the crowd, public broadcasting in the United States, even it tried a reality show. Of course, they didn't follow the formula, and it failed. Because the formula was focus group tested really hard about what was the most interesting people to have on there. It wasn't, you know, it was more personality types. Who would attract which group? If you got a pretty good group of them, well, you attracted a lot of people. Luckily, my television had already died before that. And I don't think I've ever watched a reality show. And so it's somewhat meaningless to me. Anyway, so yeah, one of my favorite things to listen to, but the problem was that Lisa didn't like it. Lisa has a much more typical taste than I do. She is not an intellectual, and the fact that she tolerates me at all is frankly a miracle, and I'm grateful. I might get back to Russ Roberts now, that I'm thinking of it. When I take my walks, I don't feel like talking. Russ Roberts would be a wonderful thing to listen to. It was, basically, I don't know how long. Basically, one guy, I don't know what kind of staff he has, I doubt it's a very easy score. He's just a college professor. He might have a couple of students working for him. Using the resources of the university to do such thing. And I'm sure it's bought I hope it's brought ones that were interested in but I fear that all it did was to solidify their choice that they wanted to go there as opposed to, you know, one of the other schools of economics in the U.S. or in the world. Anyway, I used to listen to him quite religiously. But we put him in the morning mix. He used to have a different thing, you know. It used to be Irish music, BBC, and then there was a different thing every day. You could almost create the whole week by what you were listening to. And it worked on some levels, it didn't work on others. As you know, podcasts kind of die out over time. And so, we'd be listening to a podcast, and the show would go off the air. But the last episode would continue to be played, or they would stop making the podcast about it. They would cut that off. Days of austerity, you know. And so started to get repeaters. Well, then the big dump came. I went from having an open BSD server back to Debian Linux, GNU Linux, and all the things I worked up, all the stuff wouldn't work anymore. I had to rewrite all the scripts, and I just barely got to the point where, probably about a month ago, I can pull down podcasts again. Finally, got the right combination and got all the glitches worked out. And anyway, so when all that happened, that's where I lost Econ Talk, and I just stopped. I stopped doing it, but it was one of the good ones. If you're a smart person that really wants to have an idea of how things really work, everything revolves around money in this particular sphere of existence. Well, here are people debating the ramifications of one philosophy or another on econ talk. And it's very interesting because I think most people think it's pretty settled. And then nobody questions, really, the basic way things are done. But you have to understand a lot of voices question it. And come back and say we should probably do things differently, order the economy differently. You know. And there's the same kind of political rambling that happens, you know. People get called filthy socialists or stinking, uncaring, laissez-faire capitalists and all sorts of stuff. If you thought dumb hicks in Mississippi were the only ones fighting about the way things should be, especially the halls of academia, you can see a different level of those same fights, those same arguments. It's quite interesting. Which kind of informs my thought that either our country needs to split into two countries, which I think isn't ever going to happen. What I think could happen that would be most advantageous is our return to a definite shift towards states' rights, where each individual state almost functions as its own country, and that a federal government, you know, simply acts in the realm of foreign affairs, things like that. A really workable way of looking at these things. You know, so if you are a liberal-minded person that really wants kind of as close to quasi-socialism as can be gotten without, you know, stripping away everything and just going straight to communism, there could be a handful of states that do that, you know. But still allow people to vote with their feet, you know. You can have almost every part of communism in your state, except for the whole thing of you have to say, you know, they can't put up a wall and not let you leave. You know, that's one of the rights that we may have to codify. It didn't have to be codified before because there was no technology to force you not to leave someplace. That's very much a 20th century thing, was that you could actually ensnare an entire population to the point to where they couldn't leave very easily. The 21st century is probably going to be known as the surveillance state. It's really the first time we've ever had the capability of the technology to basically surveil everybody and to keep tabs on everybody and to act on that information. So, you know. It sounds kind of bleak. I apologize. You know, along with the joy of iPads, I am indifferent to it. I tend to be a little more skittish of the technology, tend to avoid it. And have more trust in older versions of Linux when I know that it was still kind of starting and coming, and when it was not before anybody really felt the need to start interjecting the mechanisms of surveillance into things. I don't know if it's there or not. You know, it's pretty obvious by some of the things that get said about, you know, Microsoft products and Apple products is that both of those have been rendered surveillance friendly. And, you know, they even talk about, and frankly, the sad thing is that by and large, Americans don't care. As long as they can have cool little doodads that follow everything they do, you know, what more do you need? It's almost tempting. I've used Google Chrome for quite some time. Just because of, it was really the first one to come up with syncing between different devices so I could have my bookmarks everywhere. And, I'm starting to think that I really don't want to do that anymore. You know, that particular cool functionality, isn't interesting to me as it once was. And, you know, chances of being in Firefox and in Explorer quite high. I know I'm not sure about Opera, which actually comes out of Scandinavia, but, you know, the difference between the U.S. government surveillance and the European government surveillance, I don't think is really much different, and chances are you're being surveilled through Opera as well. So one with lesser things, I've thought over time about pulling back to using my own mail server to handle mail instead of using Google apps. You know, the decision is going to hit me, I think, in 2014 when I'm not going to be using Quix.us anymore. I'm using my more internationalized one, Qix.me, and I did that originally in preparation for a move to Shetland. And, you know, all roads lead to Montenegro as far as I'm concerned, concerned with. So I'm going to pull back to that from, you know, remind myself a little bit more, you know, not to be so, what's the term for exposed. And I know, Jason, you sound like some kind of a weird conspiracy nut. You go, no, this is, but you know what? It's never good to have yourself hanging out. I don't, you know, the whole Facebook craze is not even, it wasn't even interesting to me from the beginning. You know, putting your intimate details out there for pretty much everybody to see and everybody to hear about, broadcasting yourself that way. That must excite the government like nobody's business, you know, because they're going to have so much dirt, you know. The government can't be more gleeful and happy than when it has enough dirt on everybody to justify anything it ultimately has to do, whether it chooses to round you up, put you into a camp, chooses to do something hideous to you. Honestly, I'm more along the lines of trying to stay off of the radar screen as much as I can. And over time, I've gotten more like that. So you know what? It's just there is a certain peace to flying under the radar. And I know people think that's just silly, or they think by nature you have something to hide. You know, I don't know if I have anything to hide, but I really don't know at what point they're going to round up all the intellectuals. You know, that's cocky for me to say that I think I'm an intellectual, but I tend to hang out where people who are intellectuals hang out. You know, I tend to listen to the same things that they do. And quite interesting. So yeah, so you know, who was I listening to? I think I was listening to Glenn Beck, and I don't listen to him much at all. I just have to be listening, and he started talking about the fact that there's a whole thing about General Petraeus, who right now is the director of the CIA. He was one of the super generals that got put in charge of either Iraq or Afghanistan and helped, you know, become this great, amazing guy, and apparently he got caught in an extramarital affair. But apparently a lot of it was done because of stuff that he had on his email account. And Glenn was totally flummoxed because he was under the impression that great people didn't have email accounts. And it's true, by and large. You know, people who, you know, because of how easily hacked they are, so you don't tend to have a private email account that's hackable. And, you know, I don't purport to be a great man, but I don't want to have my stuff just randomly perused because it's included with 5 billion other people's stuff on a server. So, I'll probably get back to running a very running my own email. It's been really quite useful to have my mail out on what they call the cloud, but on some level, it's just not very, very good. So, anyway, I don't know when I'm going to do that. I've thought about it a few times and just haven't done what was required. But at some point I'll do it. Probably with Citadel. You know, it's got a nice web interface. It can easily take the place of kind of the Gmail interface. It's a little kludgy, but you know, honestly, I don't care. You know, much more about providing a service for myself. My family will have to, at some level, move over. Shana pretty much got her own kind of more social account, Yahoo. I think that was to communicate more with a young man that she was engaged to for a while, that she had never met in the flesh. Those internet romances, anyway. So, all the rest of them seem to have stuck with what I provided, and I'm going to go ahead. I should probably do this before Josh gets into anything like that. I think if I made a change on Brenna's, that she would be able to adjust. Of course, Lisa hardly has any contact with this stuff at all. In fact, my tendency would be to kind of drop her off altogether. Drop off what she's done before and let her start again. I think that's a good idea. Anyway, nearly home. Oh, you know, and the last one, which frankly is the one I follow the most for just being smart general talk, is Dan Carlin. He's excellent. He's kind of all over the radar screen. Sometimes you think he's a liberal. Sometimes you think he's a conservative. Most of the time, he is neither. And I like that. He hasn't pigeonholed himself and feels beholden to any of these guys, which I think is great. One of my bigger problems is, you know, I tend to, you know, people ask me, I tend to say I'm a libertarian, and I tend to try and conduct my life that way, and whether it's smart or not. And it's kind of interesting because the libertarians are not a really cohesive, terrible group. I'm not a member of the party. Anyway, so. Okay. This is a turn home. Oh. I need to fix up my hair so it doesn't look so bad. Anyway. So maybe we'll talk about Dan Carlin a little bit more later. But anyway, this is Jason, and have a great day. Well, that's how it does it when it goes over an hour. Interesting. Oh, what a mess. But it works, I hope.